Greetings and welcome to another episode of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And we're joined today for this last episode of our season by a backer, John Ganella. Welcome to the show, John.
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me.
So, John, welcome. Tell us about who you've asked us to listen to.
So I probably put way too much thought into who I was going to pick, but the two primary criteria I had was, one, a genre you hadn't hit, and two, a band that I love to hear live, because I think that, you know, increases my level of love for a band by multiples. But I chose the Avett Brothers out of North Carolina for this episode.
Very cool. And thank you for confirming that they are pronounced Avett Brothers, not Avett Brothers, because I was pretty sure when we were doing the last episode, and I said, all right, coming up next week, the Avett Brothers. And I'm like, is it Avett or is it Avett? And I've been telling myself it's the other, because somebody corrected me and I've been going the wrong way. But okay, so it is the Avett Brothers.
Either that or I've been mispronouncing their name since, I don't know, early 2000s.
No, I think that's absolutely right. And I think it was somebody corrected me once when I played them on Coverville saying, no, Brian, you're pronouncing it wrong. It's the Avett Brothers. And, well, who knows? Maybe it's one of them. I don't know. But you mentioned that it's a genre that we haven't covered before. Now, what I know I have my own ideas of what genre they fit into, but I think it's going to be different for a lot of different people. What genre do you see them as fitting into?
Well, at least looking at the genre you had not hit was kind of their bluegrass roots, though. You look at it and you hear them described as Americana or folk rock, it always goes back. And as you listen to their first album, Country Was, I think you'll see a lot of primarily the bluegrass there and then how they evolve from that album.
Yeah, and Americana was what I was describing them as, starting to listen to them. So Americana, bluegrass, country folk. I mean, they do straddle, they merge a lot of lines from a lot of different genres. Hammond, I know we talked about this, but what genres are you hearing?
I think Americana kind of sums it all up, but I also heard a lot of folk. I heard a lot of some definite tinges of bluegrass, but it wasn't like the Appalachian speed metal bluegrass.
Right. How quickly can you strum, 400 chords and
yeah, like it not blue, not the Ellie Mae walking down the stairs bluegrass.
Right. No, not by any stretch.
Yeah. You mentioned their band you really like to see live. Have you ever hear live? Have you seen them in concert or is it their live albums that you're referring to?
I've seen them live at this point, I don't know how many times, going back to, before I Am Loving You, when they really became popular, getting to see them at places like Lincoln Theater in Raleigh, and particularly the Orange Peel up in Asheville, North Carolina, where they used to play a three-night set between Christmas and New Year's every year back, as they were growing in popularity.
That's cool. And they obviously from North Carolina. So, I mean, they're going to be their stomping grounds. That's where they're going to be performing in the smaller clubs or the smaller venues and the more intimate sessions, which is very, very cool. Yeah. So far loving what I'm hearing, from the band and, really excited to get into more of this. What's your favorite, memory that you associate with the Avett Brothers? I'm guessing it's going to be one of their concert performances.
It will be, probably, and I've seen them as they've grown, in stadiums as well. But going back to those early shows at the Orange Peel, I do remember one of the nights they closed out the show with a song, Salvation Song, off of the Mignonette album. And the refrain of that song, which I just love, they ended up repeating, singing over and over again, and then the crowd joining in. Is it almost felt like a New Year's Eve show, though it wasn't quite New Year's Eve at that time. And that was just, it was one of those things where the band and the crowd both had the right energy, which just makes, live music so special.
So John, do you have a favorite Pretty Girl song of theirs?
Well, there is Pretty Girl from Raleigh, which is where I'm from, which is always nice, even though it's misspelled on Raleigh is misspelled on Spotify. So
is it really? How do they spell it on Spotify?
I think it's R-A-L-I-E-G-H.
Oh, no.
On Spotify.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, a lot of Pretty Girl songs. So you got to go with the local one. You got to go with the Pretty Girl from Raleigh. Very cool. So what is, as people are starting to listen to this stuff themselves, what is something that you want people to know about as they go into this episode?
Well, I think you'll see it as you go through is that their music is very personal. Everything from kind of their faith, I believe the Everett Brothers, their grandfather was a Methodist minister, through some very personal albums, including True Sadness, which was their last release, that, you know, hit a time of their lives where they were going through some transition, that all of their songs, and you can see it as their music transforms over the years, really is they never mail in an album, which is really just great from a fan's perspective.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. I mean, you want to feel like they're like a band is not phoning it in, right? And not saying, well, we've got two really good hits on here. Let's throw a few extra songs in here about, I don't know, making cheese or pretty girls in the cheese factory. Or I guess I'm kind of hungry. Maybe I shouldn't do this show when I'm hungry. But no, that's cool. You want a good solid set of music.
Pretty Girl at Chick-fil-A.
Pretty Girl at Chick-fil-A, yeah. Sure. Very good. Hammond, do you have any further questions for John?
No, I just want to let you know that you were concerned about how I was going to respond to this album, and I did enjoy it, but I will say that the mental preparation that it took for me to downshift from a few weeks of, I don't know, faster music,
right?
It was a mental exercise that I wasn't quite ready for when I first hit play on that first album.
And that's one thing that I'd have, Hammond, if when they come, you know, close to y'all, I think they're playing Red Rocks later on in the summer. It's worth catching them live because there's a different level of energy. And you hear it some in the, you know, the four live albums that they have. But you really don't, you can't really feel it unless you're there, but it's much, There's a greater connection, and it's a different experience than listening to the albums. Not always true when you see live music, but with them, it is worth investing the time. It'll increase your appreciation for the albums a lot if you take the time.
That's cool. Well, God, I mean, seeing any band in at Red Rocks, it's such an amazing venue. Elevates the music itself. So
if you saw Third Eye Blind there, would you like them all of a sudden?
It's possible. I mean, I don't necessarily want to try to find out, but it's certainly possible.
I'm not going to buy a plane ticket to find out. I know that.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. There are other things there's other experiments that I'd much rather try and do than seeing a pet like Third Eye Blind at Red Rocks. Very cool. Well, John, thank you so much for recommending these guys. And more importantly, thank you for your support as a Soundography patron. It means a lot to us that you support the show and that you interact with us on this level. So thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. It has been a lot of fun following y'all since you started the podcast.
Cool. Well, I look forward to this, and I look forward to your other suggestion in a coming up season of the show. So once again, thank you, John. Do you want to tell people where they can find you? Do you have like a Twitter account you want people to check out? Or
It's at JF Gonella, at JF Gonella. And most of what you will see if you follow me pretty much has to do with music.
Oh, cool. Oh, I love that. All right. Excellent. Following you right now. Thank you so much, John. And let's jump right into this episode of Soundography. Hello and welcome to another episode of Soundography. Soundography is a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I'm Hammond Chamberlain.
Yeehaw. And as you could tell from the first part of this episode, we're talking about the Avett brothers today. Big thanks to John Ganella for supporting this episode, for being a patron. And we'll tell you more about how you can do what John did later on in this episode. But see, I don't know if I want to say delving back into country for this one, because I feel like it's more Americana. Like, that's the style of music this is, right? Bluegrass, Americana.
Yeah, I think it's probably more Americana folk, because I don't even know if it's bluegrass, because bluegrass is like speed metal for people who live in Appalachia.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it bluegrass either. Tina was asking about this as we were listening to the albums on the way back from Cripple Creek this last weekend, Victor, Colorado, and Cripple Creek. She was like, what would you call, what is the genre of this music? And I said, I tend to think of it as Americana. And she says, oh, well, what's Americana? And I said, well, this music is Americana.
Things that won't fit anywhere else.
Pretty much. And then the rest of the ride got really quiet. So, but yeah, I mean, this is what I would define as Americana. I'd probably put, you know, folks like, Neil Young would probably be Americana rock.
Some Neil Young.
Some Neil Young. Absolutely. Yeah. This note's for you. And, his heavier stuff for sure not, but
maybe even like Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young might fit into this.
Yeah. I think that's a good, yep. Yeah, I think that's a good, it's a good definition. I mean, it's close to folk, it's close to bluegrass, it's close to all these other kind of neighboring styles, but that's probably what the way I describe it.
However, I can tell you that the mental downshifting I had to do after coming off of Anthrax, it actually took me a day or two to realize that I'm not playing everything on like half speed.
Yeah, I mean, coming off of not just Anthrax, but The Clash and Ozzy Osbourne as well. This was like a, we almost got whiplash listening to this music. The change was so abrupt, but I really like the change. And for me, driving through one lane roads through rural mountain Colorado, and listening to this stuff felt like, you know, there's no way that Anthrax or Ozzy or, I mean, even stuff like 21 Pilots and Foo Fighters and stuff like that that we've done earlier this season, none of that stuff would have fit as well with what we were seeing as we were driving than the Avett Brothers.
So this has taken over the Posies, or is it up there at that Posies trip?
Oh, no. It just fit well. I wouldn't say it was, it's not, yeah, there's a,
religious experience that wasn't was
exactly yeah the Posies were a religious experience, the Globe and the Posies, and I'm trying to remember what else was on that trip, maybe NXSX, I can't remember, but those two albums for sure. But anyway, let's talk about the Avett Brothers. They are a folk rock band from North Carolina. Or
so are you familiar with Billy Pilgrim?
Totally. Yeah,
I think there's a lot of similarities between them and Billy Pilgrim.
Yeah, I think so. And I'd probably even say Americana for Billy Pilgrim as well. I definitely got a Counting Crows vibe from a lot of stuff, especially the mid-tempo or the stuff with harmonies. Like these guys and Counting Crows could open up for each other, you know, whichever one happened to be promoting something at the time would be the headliner, and then the other one would be opening. But yeah, really... Such a great vibe from these guys, musically.
Yeah, I enjoyed this. This was, I know that John was a little bit worried about how I would take this one.
Yeah.
Once I was able to get into the right mental gear, which took me a day or two, I was able to really get with the flow and thoroughly enjoy these guys.
Yeah, for sure. The two brothers in the band are Scott and Seth Avett. They're backed by Bud Crawford and Joe Kwan. Mike Marsh and Bonnie Avett Reaney joined them on the road when they perform. The brothers have been playing music together since they were young. They released three albums as a band called Nemo, but after experimenting with acoustic music, they decided to put together an EP called The Avett Brothers, appropriately, in 2000. They did continue to perform as Nemo for a little while longer after that.
So I went looking for some Nemo recordings. I just couldn't find Nemo.
I was waiting. When you said I went looking, I was, oh, you weren't finding Nemo? Yeah, I was, okay. So you...
You knew exactly what you were doing at the set of that. Dad joke. We might have to change the name of the show to Dad Jokes.
Dad Jokeography.
Dad Jokeography. Once Nemo broke up, they brought in a stand-up bass player, Bob Crawford, who I think I might have called Body Crawford earlier, and worked to release their first full-length album. This first album was 2002's Country Was. Once the album was done, they self-promoted and booked their tour.
This is the first strong effort. It really shows that they'd been working together for a long time before this release. It's kind of like that whole thing about it takes 10 years of work to be an overnight success. And right. This really does show you that they really fine-tuned their skills before they started actually making a push to do something. And the organization and the stones it takes to self-promote and book your own tour, man, thumbs up to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, really good first effort. And totally agree with you. Like, it felt like, you know, if it weren't for knowing about Nemo, I would have said, all right, well, these guys were obviously in something together before this. And there you go. The album, by the way, very traditional country bluegrass. They recorded and released a live album of covers and original songs called Live at the Double Door Inn.
And I think it's kind of smart that they were working their live stuff as early as they were. Most bands don't release live album until they have a couple of albums under their belt of material. But these guys were like, nope, we're good live, so we're going to do it too.
It's a matter of knowing what your strong suit is and a live
band. And maybe what your audience wants.
Yeah. Right. For sure. In 2003, A Carolina Jubilee came out. This album showed the group's ability to cross styles and genres in both writing and performing.
Okay. The D-Bag Rag.
Yes.
is one of my favorite titles of all of Soundography.
I know. That is a great song title. The D-Bag Rag.
It's an instrumental, so they could have called it whatever they want.
Yeah.
But they went with that. Yeah. Which tells me they are some clever, clever boys.
Totally are, yeah. It was released as a bonus EP, this Carolina Jubilee, a bonus EP that contained two extra songs, In the Curve and Tale of Coming News. They followed that up the next year with Mignonette in 2004. This album featured polished harmonies and more mature lyrics. This album is named after a yacht that sank near the Cape of Good Hope.
So I did a little poking around about that. And there's a legal case about cannibalism that came out of that whole wreck.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah, the case is R.V. Dudley and Stevens, if you want to look it up. And really, it's about how cannibalism and survival situations were dealt with legally.
Interesting. So, a stranded boat, I'm guessing. Everybody's starving. Yeah. They're deciding on who they're going to eat kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep.
Which is funny because prior to knowing that it was about a yacht, I'm familiar with the other definition of mignonette, which is like a sauce that you make with chives and vinegar, maybe?
Oh, I thought it was like a baby, one of those yellow guys.
A baby minion, sure.
Yeah.
Or a female minion.
Yeah.
A baby would be a mignonite. 2005 saw the release of yet another live album called Live Volume 2.
Yeah, you're going to see a pattern established real quick with their live albums.
I'm guessing so. In 2006, they released Four Thieves, the Robbinsville Sessions. It was recorded over the span of 10 days. The album was titled Four Thieves Gone after Scott Avett realized their song Denouncing November Blue sounded identical to the Charlie Daniels song Uneasy Rider, whom they ultimately credited with the songwriting. It's not the last.
Probably to save themselves some money and some headache.
For sure, yeah. Just get that out of the way. Give the Rolling Stones credit for that bittersweet symphony and, you know.
The other thing that I wanted to bring up, it was this album that I realized just how many songs they wrote about pretty girls.
Yeah, specifically, like Pretty Girl from Chile, Pretty Girl from San Diego, Pretty Girl from the airport. And it's funny, like, to realize
makes me in traffic.
Right, pretty much. I mean, that's not too far off from what they're doing. It's kind of a very obvious way of saying, you know, I guess one brother comes to the studio and says, "Oh, hey, I saw a pretty girl at the grocery store today. Let's go ahead and record a Pretty Girl at the Grocery Store song."
Pretty Girl at the Blockbuster, Pretty Girl. Right.
Exactly.
Pretty Girl, right? New restraining order.
Wow. You think they're all the same pretty girl? Oh my God, my mind is blown. That'd be crazy. During this, let's see here. During the tour for this album, the brothers released the Gleam EP, and it was a collection of stripped down songs that they'd recorded before.
So it's interesting that they went stripped down because they were already pretty bones.
Yeah.
So they didn't even go more stripped down. I was surprised they even had music after I read that.
Like that it should have just been vocals and maybe like a
harmonica or like one of those little twangy harp,
a toy piano or something.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe they just record them naked, you know, and we just can't see it. And that's the whole stripped down aspect. In 2007, they released Emotionalism. This one debuted at the top of the Heat Seekers Billboard chart, also hit number 134 on the album charts.
Oh, Paranoia in B flat major almost made my list. I mean, it's really a good song, and I enjoyed the way it went, but there are other things I liked just a little bit more. Also, I really like the title.
Telling myself that it'll be fine. You can't make everybody happy all of the time. But I found myself in a place that I've never been, a place that I thought that I would never be.
They won the American Music Award for Best Duo Group of the Year and New Emerging Artist of the Year in 2007. In 2008, they released The Second Gleam, another collection of stripped-down songs.
Now I'm just seeing them in their underwear playing acoustic guitar.
Bongos with Michael McConaughey. Anyway.
That actually sounds like some kind of tour. Bongos with Michael McConaughey.
It could be, yeah.
Or Michael McConaughey.
Or the least popular HBO miniseries. At this point, they also announced that Rick Rubin was going to be producing their next album. They also signed to his label.
So how did... This is impressive that they got the attention of Mr. Rick freaking Rubin.
Yeah.
Who's worked with everybody from the Beastie Boys to Metallica, and he picks these guys up.
It is an interesting choice, you know, different style for Rick Rubin, but I guess if you hear something that you feel like you can bring out in a band, then it almost doesn't matter what their style is, what their genre is. Like, you know, just say, oh yeah, I can totally like bring out something in these guys' music. But I'm with you. I mean, how do you go from one to the other? Especially with
good for them.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, for sure. Did Rick Rubin do a Black Keys album? Because I'm feeling like that would almost be the shoehorn. You know, I feel like that's another band that the Avett Brothers probably could open for or cross open or whatever. I and Love and You is that album that was produced by Rick Rubin. Came out in 2009. The album peaked at number 16 on the Billboard 200 best-selling albums chart, number 8 on the best-selling digital albums chart, number 7 on the rock albums chart, and boom, number 1 on the folk albums chart.
You could hear the money that wasn't on the other albums in this album.
Yeah, you totally could. This is so much more lushly produced than the previous albums. And I really enjoyed that. I like hearing a good solid arrangement backing these guys, especially with the lyrics and things like that. When you've got kind of a plunky arrangement, and that's not, you know, certainly making it sound like it's a negative thing, and it isn't. It was, you know, what their sound was there at the beginning. But when you've got a sound that is very sparse, then it almost tends to fight with the vocals, and you hear you're not able to pick out the vocals as much as you can. This was one of the first albums where I was, well, I take that back. It was an album where I was able to hear the lyrics a lot more than in previous songs and previous albums.
My hands, they shake, my head, it spins. Oh, Brooklyn, Brooklyn, take me in.
The title track, I Am Loving You, was released as the first single from the album, which was well received by critics and fans. In support of the album, they appeared on all the late night shows and on Austin City Limits. In 2010, another live album was released. Lo and behold, it's An Alternating Path, Live Volume 3. This one also had a companion DVD as well. So it's either we follow up an album with a live album or we follow up an album with a stripped down.
Yep, either they're live or they're in underwear.
Right, exactly. Well, let's hope that it's never simultaneously both. In 2012, they released The Carpenter. This one debuted at number 4 on the Billboard 200 and was nominated for the Grammy Award for Best Americana Album.
Well, there you go.
I didn't even see that until now. There.
So on Spotify, there is a commentary track by track of this album. Cool. It's really interesting to listen to. And I thoroughly enjoyed listening to it, you know, alternating back and forth so I could hear the track and then understand what they were talking about with the commentary. It was really quite entertaining, and I recommend people doing it if they have time.
That's cool. Is it, do they talk over the songs, or is it like they alternate a song and then a description of that song?
So what they've done is they'll start the song and then they fade it down. They talk for a little bit. They turn it back up and talk a little bit, or they turn it up, plays, and then they talk a little bit more, and then it's over. So they're real short commentary things. It's like almost like introductions.
Yeah, that's kind
of
cool.
Instead of, or, you know, backstory kind of thing, just real short blurbs, but it's good.
That's really cool. Yeah, I'll have to check that out for sure. Live and Die was also released as a single from this album.
How can I find you? 'Cause I wanna send you in more. I wanna tempt you in more. Can you tell that I am alive? Let me prove it.
In 2013, Magpie and the Dandelion came out. This was a follow-up companion for The Carpenter. I loved the song Skin and Bones from this album. This was almost a sixth for my playlist, as a matter of fact.
I live the tragedy I share. It's quick to drag you in, but hard to shake. It gives but doesn't match how much.
Which is a weird double play with Bone movies from
yeah, very different, thing. I didn't even think about that. Hilarious. Another is Waiting was released as a single from this album. Do you want to guess what came out in 2015, Hammond? I mean, I know you wrote it, but
I'm guessing that it's a live album, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's Live Volume 4.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Flip a coin, either live album or stripped down album. Live Volume 4, 2015. The next year, True Sadness came out. This one debuted at number 3 on the Billboard Top 200, and it topped the U.S. folk and U.S. top rock charts. Really like this album. This, as I was going through, you know, since I'm driving, I can't open up Google Sheets or notes or anything like that and write down the songs I like. So I basically just give assign love to the songs that I like from each album. This one actually had the most hearts of any of the albums that I listened to. And it was really, really good.
Yeah, so it looks like you're really good at Mario.
Hey, listen, Mario wasn't hearts. Zelda was hearts.
Oh, see, I didn't have an NES.
Mario had one life, unless he was Super Mario, and then he basically...
Oh, so what I was actually thinking was I was going to make one of the Popeye video game jokes. Oh, yeah. We had to catch the parts from olive oil.
That would be a much better representation.
Missed opportunities by Hammond Chamberlain.
Popeye! By the way, this also was a Rick Rubin-produced album. They were back with Rick Rubin for True Sadness. Although this album gained mixed reviews from critics, Ain't No Man was released as a single. That's a very Black Eyed Peas sounding song.
If you're looking for truth and proof, you'll find it there. You got to serve something, ain't that right? I know it gets dark, but there's always a light. You don't have to buy in to get into the club. Trade your worries
You gotta show up if you wanna be seen. If it matters to you, Ma.
In late 2017, Roses and Sacrifice was debuted on Late Night with Seth Meyers. Trouble Letting Go was released not too long after that, with Neapolitan Sky releasing February of this year. On April 3rd, 2019, they announced that a musical based on their music, titled Swept Away, would debut in 2020. All right, we've talked about these things before, right? Like, you've got Mamma Mia based on ABBA. You've got Moving Out based on the music of Billy Joel. These guys, talk about a quick rush to stardom, or a quick rush to that level when you've got a musical based on your music and you're, you know, you're not a headline rock arena crowd filling band. You're good. You're, you know, don't get me wrong, I love their music. They're, you know, solid band, but they're not packing the Madison Square Garden or things like that to warrant creating a musical or musical of their music.
Well, you know, it's going to be about pretty girls.
Right. That's right. Each act is basically a new pretty girl. And they all end with heartbreak. And then we move on to another pretty girl. That's really funny. Didn't even think about that. But yeah, it's totally, totally pretty.
So
girl,
pretty girl
in the third row of our musical. It's going to be.
They just pull them up out of the crowd, yeah, and sing to them.
I love it.
I actually, part of me is very excited about this because I do enjoy this kind of thing where they take a bunch of stories and songs and make a story that fits around it.
Yeah.
I enjoy that creative challenge. I enjoy people who do it well. However, the bands that have had it done have enough variance from song to song that it creates mood. Now, unless some of these songs are going to be rearranged to be faster tempo, to be different kind of things, it's going to be a lot of the same feel throughout the musical.
Yeah, right. That's a good point.
And that's going to present a storytelling and an audience keeping challenge that has to be overcome.
And it's funny because I like seeing this done. I'll be honest, I don't think I've ever seen one. I really wanted to see We Will Rock You, and I missed out on the opportunity when that was in Vegas. I hear it's coming back though, and it's actually coming through Colorado.
I've seen Mamma Mia.
I saw the movie. Does that count?
No, I've seen it on stage, yeah, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. I'm a big ABBA fan.
Yeah.
So
that worked for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. I'm curious. I mean, this is one of those things that I would, especially this I would like to see. In addition to that, they're currently working on a brand new album that's scheduled for 2019, but no firm date has been set. All right. What are some statistics and general notes about this relatively new band?
So in 2016, they were inducted in the North Carolina Music Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. Does Colorado have a Music Hall of Fame?
Oh, it might. I don't know. I'd never heard of a state-by-state Hall of
Fame. Yeah, neither have I. That's, I don't think Salt Lake has a Music Hall of Fame.
No, but I'm trying to think. I mean, in Colorado, you've got John Denver. You've got 303, The Fray. I'm not sure who else would be in the Colorado Music Hall of Fame, but I'll bet there is. I'll bet somebody started one.
Hey, Matt Parker and Trey Stone.
Well, they'd be in the Colorado Hall of Fame. I don't know if they'd be in the Colorado Music Hall of Fame.
They've written musicals all of their movies, except for even Team America had songs
good
in
point.
It.
Yes, right. That's a really
everything good point. They all their movies there are musicals.
That's a really good point because yeah, you'd have stuff from the Mormon
or Orgasm, not a musical.
No, but sure, Basketball was.
Basketball wasn't them. They're just acting in it.
Oh, they didn't write that?
Uh-uh.
All right. It was a good stall because now I can tell you that, yes, there is a Colorado Music Hall of Fame, not a rock and roll, but Colorado Music Hall of Fame. I will tell you who the inductees are. I was correct in predicting John Denver. Also, Poco. Didn't realize Poco was Denver-based. Diane Reeves, the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, Glenn Miller, Manassas, Firefall. Oh yeah, I forgot Firefall. Of course, Chris Daniels and the Kings, Barry Fay, who's the concert promoter out here, John Denver. There's a few other names, but those are all the ones I recognize. Why aren't I in the Colorado Music Hall of Fame, Hammond?
So here's an idea. Coverville, when you don't have anything planned, you should do a state rock and roll or music hall of fame show and have people pick what state it is.
Wow, that would be pretty good. Yeah, let's see, just out of curiosity. UMEA, page not found. So, I mean, they've got the Utah Music Educators Association. I'm looking at these names, and I don't recognize any of them, which might mean that these are educators and not pop and rock stars, if that makes sense. Oh, their logo's brilliant. Like, it's a piano, but it's in the shape of Utah. Like, it's the top down of a grand piano. That's absolutely brilliant. What else would be in...
In the Utah one? Oh, Donny Osmond.
Okay. Yeah.
Imagine Dragons.
Sure.
Imagine Dragons, Lex Diaz of what's his name? Sam Carden. What's his name? There's the Archuleta kid.
Oh, David Archuleta from American Idol.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Lindsey Sterling.
Oh yeah, Lindsey Sterling, dude from Panic at the Disco. Brandon.
Oh, Brandon Urie.
Yeah,
or Yuri. Uris?
Yeah, Yuri. And all right. Yeah, there's enough.
The Mormon Tabernacle Choir.
They're not. Yeah. Well. Yeah. Sure.
I mean, they're they may not be pop stars, but they're Utahns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Anything else as far as their statistics?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, we got sidetracked on that Hall of Fame. So Judd Apatow directed a documentary that is on UHF on HBO about them and the making of True Sadness.
That's cool. I'm going to have to look at that. I'd like to see him do a documentary about Guns N' Roses. You know what it'd be called?
What?
Apatow for Destruction.
Nice. Well played. How long have you been sitting on that one?
Just now, as soon as you said Apatow, like made me think of Appetite. Thanks.
Actually,
text that to him and have him.
You know, Appetite for Destruction could also be the documentary about Sweeney Todd.
Very good. Yeah, true. All right. Let's say you get to see the Avett Brothers in concert and they perform all their hits. What is the thing that you expect that they are going to be playing without, every concert that they have? I'm pulling up set list out of it right now.
I haven't got the slightest idea. I picked Paranoia in B flat major because I liked it. I and Love and You, Live and Die.
Yeah, I and Love and You is my guess. Even though that's a later song, it feels like it's... Because they did that for their KBCO Studio C performances. They've done that at like Austin City Limits, any radio performances. It feels like that's going to be the one. But it came out really late, so that's the caveat. No, both of those are in the top 10. Actually, I Am Loving You is in the top 10, and Paranoia and B-flat Major is in the top 10, not Live and Die. Head Full of Doubt and Road Full of Promise is number one with 694 performances. This one actually might be the one they perform at every concert.
Teach me how to use the love that people say you may.
It's followed by Laundry Room, Paranoia, and B-flat Major. Talk on Indolence, I Am Loving You, Kick Drum Heart, Murder in the City, Go to Sleep, Distraction number 74, and Down with the Shine to round out.
And none of the Pretty Girl song made it.
No, I'm looking here to see Pretty Girl from Chile is their most popular concert performed Pretty Girl song. And that's all the way down to number 27.
Because they've been court ordered not to play it anymore.
They'll only play it in Chile. Yeah, let's see. Old Joe Clark is the most frequent cover they've played, cover of a traditional song. They've also played Wanted Man. There we go. Pretty Girl from Cedar Lane. There's funny. There's a song called Pretty Girl from Instrumental. Was that from there? Was that from one of the albums, or is that something new for the concerts? It feels like it's something new.
Yeah, I don't remember an instrumental except for the D-Bag Rag.
Right. Yeah, me neither. That's great. These are great. All right, cool. And then there's a couple more. Pretty Girl from Raleigh, Pretty Girl from Annapolis. They start getting into those. Too fun. It's a fun little thing to keep doing. All right, let's talk about covers, since we kind of just touched on that subject of concerts, what they perform cover-wise in concert.
Whoa, and it's funny. I just realized we just did the same thing,
kind of. We kind of did. We did a very similar list here, which neither one of us planned on. I put mine in without looking at yours, and then I saw what you put. So here's something interesting. We both want to hear them cover McCartney. Mine is A Day in the Life by the Beatles. This came up while I was picking one of the songs that I have in my playlist, but they have a tune that is very, feels like it's two different songs smashed together, chopped up and smashed together. And I really, really like that. And it made me think, oh, they could probably do something really cool with A Day in the Life. And, so I would like to hear something like that. How about you, Hammond?
So I picked Coming Up from McCartney 2, from Paul McCartney's solo album. Yeah. This is a really fun song that has great, great bones to it. And I think they could really do some cool things with their harmonies and with their arrangements and really dip it deep in their own waters.
Can I tell you how much I like hearing you say, like, this song's got some good bones to it. Like it's, you know, like it's this old house, like you're remodeling a house, which is basically kind of what you're doing with covers.
Well, it does. This is, if you strip away all the fluff and the keyboards and the synthesizers and Paul McCartney dressed up as, you know, everybody in the world and his wife there just because she can.
Ouch.
No, Zing. I'm not kidding. Being mean. I'm just saying that she's in the video because she can be.
Yeah. you're not wrong.
When you take away all that stuff, you've got a really solid, just solid lyrical foundation and a solid bone skeleton of a song.
Yeah, I agree. I actually really like that song, and I'd like to hear them do. Would it be more of a stripped down, clean version, or would you like them to kind of rock it out? You know, a la kick drum and
I'd actually like to hear one of their gleaned versions of it, like two guitar vocals.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Just the brothers instead of the whole thing. Cause I think that would be very cool.
I think you're right. I like that. I like that idea. I like that idea a lot. Very good. All right. So, well, I mentioned my playlist. Let's get to that section right now. This is where we each pick five or six songs that we'd like you to add to a greatest hits. To my knowledge, there's no greatest hits. So I feel like the only one we really should stay away from is, or the only two are I and Love and You, and probably Fire and, I don't know, what was it called? Live and Die. Fire and Rain. That's another one they should cover. here are the ones that I picked, starting with one of them that I just mentioned. Kick Drum Heart. This, like I said, this is a total rocker, and this feels like Rick Rubin saying, "Hey, you know what? You like what I did with the Black Keys? I can do that here. Check this out," and it's great. Second one is Smithsonian. This is from True Sadness. Is almost a Counting Crows song, right? It's like got the harmonies, it's got the really good vocal, or the really good lyrical content, really, really fun lyrics about, you know, something I know is life's not forever and there's no such thing as a free lunch and all that. I totally dig that. Number three is May It Last.
And there is a lie. Here's the times that I catch it. May it last through the night. I'm as low as they come. I'm what shouldn't be done.
Also is from the True Sadness album. This, I think, is the last song, and this is the one that made me think of A Day in the Life by the Beatles. It feels like two songs, probably one by each of the brothers, mashed together into one whole song, and I really like that. Love Like the Movies went early for this one, Carolina Jubilee, their second album. Another really good set of lyrics comparing, you know, why this love is not like the love you find in the movies, which isn't real. It's fake. The love you find in the movies is fake. Yeah. Fake love. Sad. Hashtag sad. Then the last one. Since I couldn't pick I and Love and You, I went for 66% of that. This is a song called I Love.
Slow moving trains and rain. I love little country streams, sleep without dreams, Sunday school in May, and hey.
It's a cover, originally by Tom T. Hall. This actually was a song they included on the Starbucks cover compilation called Sweetheart. I like songs. I mentioned this before. I like list songs. This one's kind of a list. He's listing off the things that he loves, and it's really sweet, and I wanted to include a cover, and this was the cover I chose to include, and it's beautiful. It's sweet. Hammond, speaking of sweet, tell us about your playlist.
My first one, I Killed Sally's Lover. That's a sweet song.
Sweet.
Don't you know, you can try to hide how you want, boy, there ain't nowhere to go. Somebody get my shotgun, somebody get my blade.
Having a song talk about getting his murder tools and lists getting shotguns and blades, you gotta love that.
Wow. Yeah, no kidding. Holy cow.
It's a great song, though.
I didn't even catch this one. I mean, I know I listened to everything, but this one didn't stick out to me, so I'll have to go back and listen.
Really grabbed me, and I'm like, oh, I got to use this just because he lists off getting shotguns and blades.
That's funny. I remember Murder in the City, but I don't remember this one.
Please Pardon Yourself from Mignonette, whatever, Mignonette. I really love the harmonies. The construction of the song is really cool too. I like how it ebbs and flows and then builds up to this kind of big crescendo at the end. Yeah. And it just kind of crashes down with the full force of the song at the end. And I really enjoyed that one a lot. Talk on Indolence. This covers so much musical ground, and I had so much fun listening to it that I just had to put on the list. It just really is a cool song, and they just do so much with a short period of time in it. And it's from Four Thieves. Mm-hmm. And then, oddly enough, without knowing it, I picked their
Stairway to Heaven song.
Yeah, their Stairway to Heaven song. Head Full of Doubt, Road Full of Promise. It's from I and Love and You.
flooded in light. In the fine print they tell you what's wrong and what's right.
I don't think that there's anyone who can't relate to this song in one way or another. Also, it's just a really cool song.
I get to listen to the lyrics on that one.
This is like this whole song about self-doubt and working your way through things and feeling like you've not really. It's like the imposter syndrome song.
Sure. Yeah. This is a closeout song, right? On I Am Loving You.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. And then the last one is Paul Newman versus the Demons. From the Carpenters.
I'm glad you chose this one because I almost did as well.
This is a really, really rocking tune. And it's a huge change for them. And on the commentary track for it, they were talking about how they're not, it's Paul Newman is like the ultimate good guy. Uh-huh. And then they're talking about all the other good guys too. He's like the epitome. And then you're really fighting demons. You're fighting personal demons and you're fighting bad things. And you're really kind of this whole fight of life. And it's really a great song, and the commentary track really helped kind of pick it up for me. So it was cool.
Cool. That's a good choice too. And yeah, another closeout, album closer, if I remember correctly. Awesome. Great choice. These are great. And,
John can pick again. He's done well.
Yeah, for sure, dude. Yeah. You've so far, swings and hits is what you've done. Very good. And let's say you want to do the same thing. Let's say you want to make us listen to bands that you're a fan of that you don't think we've heard of or that maybe we barely know. This is a great time to do it. We're going to be, this is our season ending show. So we take a little bit of a break here. We focus a little bit on America's Next Top Podcaster for a few weeks, and then we come back. But in the meantime, we're not giving up on Soundography, or we're not taking a break too much from that, because we're still going to be doing You Gotta Listen to This. So here's what you can do. You can either make us listen to an entire band's catalog and be a patron at that level, or we've added the Patreon level where you can just have us listen to an album, one specific album. Hey, dudes, you got to listen to this. And I've even got one for myself that I'm going to make Hammond listen to. Can't wait.
And I've got something that I want to do for this break too, that I'm really excited about talking to you about.
Excellent. Good. Well, listen to ours and you know, do like us, become one of us for an episode and make us listen to an album that you're really excited about. All of that over there is at patreon.com/coverville. Now, if you want to get in touch with us, we love that too. We love to get your feedback. Soundographypodcast@gmail.com is the email address to use. Don't mail it to soundography@gmail.com. Some schmuck already has that email address, and I don't know what they're using it for. You can also follow us on Twitter @TheSoundography. Soundography.com is our website, and check out our playlist. We have all of our playlists on Spotify under each of the show notes for every single episode. You know what else we've got? We've got links to Amazon to where you can buy the albums, and I'm leaning towards either True Sadness or probably True Sadness, because that's been a favorite of mine. I could also be talked into I Am Loving You or The Carpenter, but
I think any of those later albums would be good.
Yeah. All right. So I'll pick one of those. That'll be the Amazon link for this episode. So just go to soundography.com, click on the show notes for this episode. You'll find buttons for all that stuff, as well as links to how you can support the show, like I mentioned, on Patreon. Even if you don't go to one of the levels where you make us listen to something, we absolutely appreciate your support, and you'll get goodies for it. Goodies are in the works. Goodies are coming. And you can also support us by leaving us reviews wherever you get your podcast. Let other people know how much you like Soundography. Help other people discover the shows wherever you get your podcasts. Hammond, another great season in the books, man.
Yeah, this was good. There was no prog and no ska.
No ska, really. I feel like we've done ourselves a disservice by not having any ska.
We overdid it the season before. It was prog.
We totally did. Yeah, good. Well, this one I feel was metal heavy, because we had new wave of British heavy metal, we had Ozzy, we had Anthrax.
Do you want me to throw out a couple names that we're kicking around for next season so people can voice opinions?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Let's hear.
Potentials for season 6. We've kind of already talked about Johnny Cash. Mm-hmm. There's some talk about the Hollywood Undead.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
There's some talk about Talk Talk.
Talk Talk Talk?
There's some Extreme Talk. There's some Live Talk, some Hojo Talk.
Ooh.
The Runaways.
Oh, that'd be another good one. I like this one.
We don't know what year we're going to do yet. There's a Megadeth conversation in the works.
Because, of course, there is.
Yeah, there always is.
Can't do Anthrax without talking about those guys.
And then we've got a Trent Reznor suggestion out there, a Fall Out Boy suggestion out there, an Underworld suggestion out there.
Nice. Oh, I like a lot of these.
And Dream Theater, Dream Theater, Spock, you know, we've already done Spock Spirit, but Dream Theater.
always on the tip of
being done.
Yes, exactly. If you ever heard that episode, you should worry.
It just keeps getting bumped back for some reason.
Amazing. I mean, I don't know how that possibly happens. Crazy. So be sure to tune into our next season. But like I said, we'll have stuff in between then and now. So stay subscribed, stay tuned, because goodies are coming. And you'll have to listen to those. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Abbott saying thanks for listening to another great season of Soundography. We'll see you next time right here.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.